Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. Each of these podcasts will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some will look at the matchday experience, while others will explore broader themes. But every podcast will deliver value to anyone listening in football, or indeed any other spectator sport. Whether it's general advice you need, or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon that a regular dose of the fan experience will make a difference for you. So join me, Mark.
Me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about the work we do, the projects we're working on at the moment, you can check out www.fanexperienceco.com, our recently relaunched website. Today's podcast looks at the matchday experience and a particular part of the matchday experience, and that is, in fact, the use of social media. This has become really important in recent years, not just to keep in touch and to keep engaged our existing fans and appealing to lapsed fans, but also how we use it to engage new audiences. One of the challenges that football will have after we get rid of this COVID pandemic is realizing that it must become more sustainable. And one of the reasons it will do that is by reaching out to a more diverse audience. It's therefore really important that not just the matchday experience, but the social media that accompanies it is prepared to do that, to reach out to different groups. Has that been your experience, Darren? Do you see that happening with clubs?
I think they had to anyway, regardless of the pandemic. So I think it's just one of those things that clubs are going to have to get better at very quickly. But you know, I think even before this happened, it's still a relatively new thing, and I still think you see huge differences between clubs who are really understanding the benefits and using it on at a very, very high level, and clubs who are perhaps sort of trying to catch up and understand how best to do that.
I think you're right, Darren. And you know, I think in the early days of the fan experience assessments, of course, social media wasn't part of it. It's only been in recent years, and even then, I think it's probably fair to say that something like 90%. Of the social media experiences are kind of putting out, just broadcasting. You know, they're not designed to particularly interact. For example, they're not seeking feedback. Yeah. And certainly plenty of evidence that they don't look to target particular groups, you know, within matchday audience. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and there's very little two-way dialogue. I mean, there is a little bit if someone makes a direct... asked a direct question, for example, but I don't think there's very many examples that I see where there's real two-way interaction between fans, especially on non-footballing matters, shall we say.
I think you and I have got several kind of other social media accounts that we use when we're doing our assessments around Europe for asking questions before the match day. You know, questions like, I'm coming to my first game, what do you suggest I do in the 2 or 3 hours before the match? And, you know, I think we've had some, you know, we've had some great answers. I remember when I went to see Pex Voller, very memorable day, because it was the day that Sunderland lost to Portsmouth in the on penalties in the Challenge Cup a couple of years ago. But they, you actually sent the message, Darren, because I didn't have an account set up at the time. And they told me about an adjoining hotel. And that it was kind of part of the it was part of the football complex there, and I was welcome to spend some time. So it was quite interesting because I ended up at the bar, actually watching the game at Knack Breda that you were attending.
That I remember, yeah. I mean, it is interesting because that's a classic example of how reactionary clubs can be, and still do it very effectively. But what I always find really amazing is how a club will have something very useful, for example, a match day guide or a really good page on its website that we will see in advance. And then the first time that finds its way onto social media is 11:30 or midday on the day of the game. Who is that really going to help? Because most people will have already set out by then. And that's not going to bring anybody new or make anybody think differently before about planning their journey, because it's simply too late.
Well, it strikes us as one of those other things that, you know, isn't a priority. And we understand the pressure that are on clubs, especially those that we, you know, prioritise our time with, who are outside of the elite and have to do the most with the fewest resources. So we wanted to find somebody who could be a guest on this podcast with plenty of experience, but somebody whose club has recently been awarded the Family Club of the Year, somebody who has used social media very positively over the last 4 or 5 years in terms of engaging with existing fans, but also appealing to future audiences. Unfortunately, that person wasn't available, so we had to ask Sean Lockwood from Doncaster Rovers to come and come on the podcast. So, hiya, Sean, how are you?
Thank you for that beautiful introduction. Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We're both well. How are you coping with the COVID situation?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think as our little family unit of four, we're doing okay. We're balancing home working and homeschooling, and my kids are fairly young, to be fair. So they're 6 and 4. So it's the homeschooling is more just trying to keep the brains engaged and a little bit of structure, the routine.
Your role in the club, how has that been? How does that work in a period like this? Are you still in touch with your colleagues? Are you talking regularly? How does it work?
Yeah, so we've tried to keep our senior management team and more or less someone representing each department together, albeit virtually. So we're kind of having video calls on Monday and Thursday mornings, providing little updates from there. Majority of staff we've utilised the furlough scheme just because there, you know, there isn't anything for them to do, unfortunately. As a club, we kind of diversify our income probably more than most other clubs. You know, we've got offices that we lease out to businesses in the area. We've got car parks that we lease out to businesses. We've got 5-a-side pitches on the side of the stadium. We have a car boot market. You know, we have discount card schemes. We do diversify away from football quite a bit on a normal scale, but pretty much every income stream we've had has been impacted.
There have been elements of the old, you know, Barcelona sporting model that we've seen, you know, in Doncaster. You know, the idea would be more than a club. I mean, you have clearly stated that. You know, this has been something that's been characteristic of the club over several years now, which is that you're not just a club, but you're actually a community hub. So let me start with the Family Club of the Year. That was last year. You were voted Family Club of the Year. You've always had a reputation for outstanding family experiences, especially for people bringing their kids for the first time. And, you know, you never know, you might hold this trophy for 2 seasons, the way things are going.
But longest serving winners is what I'm going for, Mark.
You know, a big part of that was things such as the mascot having his own digital presence. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so our mascot, Donnie Dog, we wanted to really find a way of utilising the mascot who's, you know, really, as all mascots are, but in Doncaster, you know, Donnie Dog really goes back down well with the younger audience and finding those, you know, for kids. They might not know who the new midfielder is that we've signed, in all honesty, for, you know, 6, 7, 8, but, you know, you go into a school with a big furry dog and, you know, and it's about 6 foot tall and they jump at him. So, you know, that's always positive. We want to try and utilise that kind of experience on a virtual level, on digital level, rather than just physical. So we created a couple of things over the past 12, 18 months. One has been Donnie Dog's own Twitter account, which we use very much to engage with children and parents of children and putting different worksheets out for colouring in, for example, or providing some information that might be relevant to families and using that as a really tailor-made audience for families. But then also we created something called Donnie Dog TV, which was exactly what it sounds like, really. It was a video show that we've created for kids and families to watch, just short segments, something a little bit more fun, something a little bit lighthearted, often involving kids and you're doing something that might be at the training ground, for example.
Well, wasn't this where you debuted the famous Dogglebox?
It was Dogglebox, which, it's amazing how you can get a mascot that can't do character features to actually show expressions, but through body language. And we've got, and Donnie Dog's amazing at that, in all honesty. So, yeah, Dogglebox was about players watching reruns of games with children, sat next to them, and the mascot. And obviously the players kind of, you know, bought into this a bit and they can give each other a little bit of banter and the kids can ask some cracking questions. And then you just get to see Donnie Dog respond through body language at some of the questions and the banter, which is always funny. It doesn't sound it when you're trying to explain it, but it just works.
Sean, you joined me by video conference at an event earlier in this year in Denmark, and spoke to all of the clubs in their second tier of professional football. And I remember, because I could see all of the audience watching the screen when you were talking about some of the things you'd done with Donny Dog, and literally their eyes were wide open with this sudden realization that there was this whole channel ahead of them that they probably weren't utilizing hardly at all. Just on a practical level, what could you say some clubs who are well below the level you're at, what practical steps could they start to take to start to move in the right direction?
To be honest, it's probably one of the easiest things you can do. You know, if you have a mascot, you know, it's already there. It's already designed at engaging with that younger audience and children. So it's just creating the channels and the platforms for that mascot to have a voice. So, you know, Twitter is the easiest thing in the world to use from this side of things. And you can create the account, you tailor it how you want it to be. So, you know, are you aiming it at children or are you aiming it at the parents of the children, in which case you can potentially use a slightly different language and be more grown up? Or if it's aiming at a younger audience and that kind of, you know, kids get access to smartphones either through the parents or anything else, you know, so you can tailor that side of things. But it's really straightforward, and it's a really easy way of just, you know, where there's so many messages come out of clubs where you put something on the website and it's aimed at everybody and it's not a targeted communication, and therefore it gets missed by a lot of the audience who you're potentially aiming it for.
Yeah, because that's got to be the biggest advantage, hasn't it? You can send messages that would almost get lost in the wider noise of, you know, of communication. You can send very specific messages to a target audience that really engages with them without almost having to worry anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, because you look at a website, for example, or even just your official channels, and you can have player-related news, manager-related news, commercial-related news, ticketing-related news, stadium news. There's a lot that goes on, lottery results, you know, there's a lot that goes on there, and a lot of it gets missed, it gets watered down just because of the frequency of articles. And for the most part, a lot of that news isn't really what fans are going to the website for. They're looking specifically for manager news, player news, who's likely to play on Saturday, who's recovering from injury. That kind of information. And everything else becomes a little bit of noise because it's not the key focus of what the people are looking for. So, and to a certain extent, family news can be like that. If you're a core fan and you've been going 30 years and, you know, you don't really need to know what Donny Dog's doing this Saturday because that's not what you're about. So Twitter gives you that opportunity to create a channel where you can clearly display who it's aimed for and target and communicate your audience really well and get those key messages across.
When you move from, if we move from families and the new audience, and that was exactly the point I was going to say, separating that out and having a separate channel makes life very easy because you're thinking about the impact of that information coming out to core fans. But you do a hell of a lot of work with social media on that front as well. And I was thinking of the last time I travelled to Doncaster Rovers with a friend of mine who I think was a Blackpool supporter. We went into the away end, but we went actually on before we arrived with lots of information about where the SLO would be, because you have a dedicated SLO account, which is really useful for fans visiting the stadium, away fans who perhaps haven't been before, who want to know what's available. And, you know, one of the things, I'm sure you'll tell us more, is that you actually have an area in the away end that is dedicated for families, a family away area.
Yeah, so again, and Dean, who's our support liaison officer, does an incredible job with this, but we want to try and tailor the match day experience to the different groups who are coming on a match day. You know, ultimately, everyone is coming to watch a game of football, but actually they're not. They're coming to share different experiences. So it could be a group of mates who are coming to watch a game as a football team coming out. It could be a family who's bringing their young son or daughter for the first time. It could be a 30-odd-year-old bloke coming with his dad because it's the only time they get to come and do things together now that they're both grown up and working and doing different things like that. So everyone's got different reasons for attending that game of football. So therefore, everyone's got different experiences and different expectations of what they want to achieve. We want to try and make sure that, you know, we know that we were fairly good at, you know, targeting home families or families that were sitting at the home end. And we wanted to do something to show that we could do this for the away fans as well and be more of a family day out. So we created an away family area. That's gone down incredibly well. We, through Dean, our support liaison officer, he goes on to the away team's fan forums. Pre-match, you know, usually makes contact a good 3 or 4 weeks before the game, shows them the away guide, shows what the information that's available in terms of cash machines, the fact that we've got a supporters bar, which is open for home and away fans, where nearest hotels are, easiest travelling to get there, anything that you might need to look out for on roadworks if we're aware of them. But obviously, also saying we've got different experiences for different audiences who are coming, including the away families. And again, it's gone down really well. It really has. It was something that we wasn't sure how successful it would be. But yeah, fans have really taken to it and love it, really.
Sure. And I was going to sort of pick up on that. I think there's a sort of link in that. One of the things that you always hear about social media in particular is people say, well, I don't know what the, you know, what the commercial benefits are. So we do lots of things, but we don't always see a tangible income or any revenue directly linked to it. How does that work in at a football club? You know, is the commercial benefits or are you not able to measure that?
There are commercial benefits. It's trying to find a balance to everything. So, you know, there's little point in me, in my opinion, spending a lot of time on social media or getting my team to spend a lot of time on social media if it's not going to really drive an impact on revenue, for example, and ticketing revenue. But if you're detailing the experience and if you're engaging an audience and you're doing it well enough that they stay in tune with the club or in tune with the brand, if you're going to speak from a wider marketing perspective, then they're more likely to buy off you. They're more likely to interact and engage with you. It's something we're always keeping an eye on. And we have different metrics that I'll look at across the team. So, you know, ticket sales and ticket revenue is by far the biggest driver, and it's something that I keep a very close eye on. But at the same time, we also want to check what the page views are on the website. How is our Twitter audience growing? What are we doing on Facebook? What are we doing via YouTube? You know, are we creating content and are we relevant in these spaces? Because, again, the audience is split and they all use different channels. So you have to make sure that you're...
Yeah, that was actually going to be my next question, actually, Sean. You've just reminded me of that. And that was, is there a perfect amount of channels you should be on, or can you never be on too many? What's your thoughts on that?
I think it purely depends on what you think your audience is like and where you think they're going to engage. And also, you've got to remember the team structure, as in the internal teams. And, you know, it's the beauty about marketing and communications is that you can always do something else. You know, we've got a fairly strong team of around six of us across a football club, a rugby club, a women's football team, stadium, and a few other different events in the marketing and comms that we put together. But we could team of nine and find something for them to do, because we could create a monthly video show on YouTube, and then we could say, well, actually, let's do it weekly. But in order to do that, you'd need additional resource. So there are never too many. It's working out what you can do effectively and what you can do efficiently. You know, we're not on TikTok as of yet. Not because I don't think it would be beneficial to be on there in the long term, but it's not really something that I think we've got a good opportunity to use and target our core audience for as of yet. So it's not going to add that additional beneficial to me that I'm looking for, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, there's a third area that I'm interested in as well. And you're a very rare club when it comes to this. And that is something Darren and I were actually discussing yesterday. The fact that there are always this kind of two roles in football. There's the club, which is serious, which communicates facts, which is, you know, quite keeping people at an arm's length. And then you've got independent fanzines that kind of, and independent websites, you know, that have the, if you like, the inverted commas, the banter and the humour of football, you know, that kind of self-deprecating football fan, as we've quoted Nick Hornby before, you know, with it's a sense of disappointment, whatever the score, you know, that sort of thing. You've done it. Your club has done that incredibly well in recent years. You've actually been able to develop a tone in your communications that is slightly self-deprecating without going too far. I mean, based on the, I know you did a lot of work on the club's identity, on the miners' strike and the role that the club had in supporting the community after that, you know, three decades ago. But in the setting up of the Black Bank, where you collaborate with supporters to effectively give them a part of the ground, you know, gave them the freedom to create that, dealt with some of the issues that were naturally going to arise. But you've also done that through social media, haven't you? There have been a couple of examples that I can remember. One was the Fleetwood Town highlights video, which I think you'll be able to tell us about. And the other one was the signing of a goalkeeper. Tell us more about those two examples, because they really connected with the way fans see themselves.
Yeah, well, first of all, I need to give credit to, I would say a former colleague, but we never actually worked together. So I was at Rovers, I left a little bit, and a gentleman called Ryan Mullen came in and kind of took over the reins, and then he left. And then a short while later, around 12 months or so later, I returned. And both of these was kind of Ryan's little babies that he took on. But I can speak a little bit about two things, really. So one of the things I think we have a culture of as a club is we're honest. You know, Mark, you did some work with us a few years ago when we talked about identity and the fact that the club and the fans, you know, the fans didn't take themselves too seriously. They used to refer to us as a pub team having a laugh. And because of kind of our rise and fall up and down different divisions. And we kind of then worked on that and said, well, how can we use that as part of our voice, but also make sure that we don't take that too far, because ultimately at the same time, fans want to make sure you are being serious at the same time, and, you know, trying to win games and putting effort in and trying to do the best by them. So
yeah, because there's a pride in the club, isn't it? People feel proud of the club.
Absolutely. And it's a tightrope that you're trying to walk. It's interesting, as when things start to go really wrong, then, you know, that leads fans to go one way or two ways in terms of, and I suppose these things start to go really well, you know, oh, don't worry about it, we'll just enjoy the ride, or actually, no, we've got a really good chance here, so let's do something, or actually, this is catastrophic, we need to fix this really now. And so there's a balance, and each fan is different.
Well, I think both examples were really good. The first one was the fan who, on social media, every summer is berating the club for not making any signings. I mean, that happens for every club up and down the league. And of course, the smaller the club, I'm not saying Rovers are a small club, but when there is a smaller club, then obviously that echoes more, because that's seen by more people, and that voice becomes more and more grating, especially if you're working, and you know you're working as hard as possible on new signings. So you signed a goalkeeper. You didn't actually promote this to the media, but actually invited that particular fan to come in and announce the signing on his own social media account. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first signing, the signing that was made, I think it was the first one that we'd made in the summer, rather than going straight to the website or going official social media channel and then linking to the website or even sending a press release to the media, it was done where we half announced it and said, we have got great news, we are going to be, and then passed over through the official channel to the supporter to announce the signing. And it was a great little idea, because it makes an advocate of somebody who potentially is being a critique. First of all, you get to speak to the individual on a one-on-one basis. And ultimately, we're all on the same side. You know, we all want what's best for the club. So by reaching out to an individual on a one-on-one basis, you show that you're hearing their concerns, which is obviously a positive. You can also explain some of the rationale of, you know, this is why we've not made signings yet. There's other things that are happening. It's not always about make the signing as quick as you can. It might be waiting for a better target to see if you can get that person, rather than going for the one that you know is available straight away.
And then, of course, you had the other example, which I think when I last looked was close on 1 million hits on YouTube. And that's, you know, pretty good for a League One club. And that was the highlights of the Fleetwood game. Must be going back about 5 years now when Ryan Morant was there. Ryan's since moved on to Brentford. But what Ryan did was he was compelled, I think, by the rules to send a short summary of match day highlights for people subscribing to Football League Club websites. And it wasn't the most particularly exciting of games. So he simply submitted 18 seconds where the players come out, the game kicks off, the goalkeeper clears it, the referee blows the whistle, and the players leave the field of play. And, you know, we had comments from Gary Lineker sharing it. It just seemed to... It chimed with footballers because, you know, Darren, what were you saying yesterday about that game with you, when you went with your dad and you were 5-0 up at half-time?
Yeah, it was just... It was just, I suppose, a typical football reaction. We watched the game. We're 5-0 up after, I think it was 46 minutes, but we're 5-0 up after 46 minutes, missed a few chances and went home disappointed that we'd missed an opportunity to score 10, you know, which is, you know, just typical football reaction, isn't it?
So next steps, how are you going to use social media or how are you thinking of using social media to re-engage with the community after we get through this pandemic?
So, I mean, what we're trying to do is you know, still keep them engaged as we currently are and do what we can in terms of communications. It's really difficult at the moment because actually what we're finding is the audience isn't that bothered about knowing, or the majority of the audience, you know, our page views have dropped. I've got screaming children in the background. I promise you they're safe and well. Our audience isn't engaging as much as what they normally would do. Obviously, there's lots more things happening, and with games definitely being off at the moment, they, you know, page views have dropped, interactions have dropped on the website. So we've got and on social media. So we've got a bit of work to do to get those back when we know more about what we can communicate and what's going to happen with football for this season and next season.
Just a question, Sean, and it's made me think, just because we were talking about the signing of that new player. And I remember when you did the presentation in Denmark, that one of the things that was quite astonishing was how involved the players were in everything that the club was doing. And the players seemed to be, you know, just literally throwing themselves into so many of the initiatives. Can you just expand on that a little bit more and tell us about how happy the players are to be involved in things like this?
Yeah, they tend to get behind everything that we do. And to be honest, as we have a really good group of players and have done for some time. You know, I've been at the club when the dressing room hasn't possibly been as engaging as it could be from some of the community stuff we want to do. But at the moment, and that's not really traditional for Doncaster. Normally, the dressing room really engages with everything we're trying to do in the community, and it's driven by the first team manager. You know, we even put it on part of his job description when he applies, that, you know, we want somebody who's going to engage with the community and look at what we do as a whole, not just necessarily on the pitch, because that is such important to our DNA. Mm-hmm. And if you get your manager bought into it, then the players buy into it and they do genuinely really love it and get involved. You know, the EFL Football League Awards, I think for the past 4 years running, we've had a player who's either been shortlisted or won the, you know, player in the community across our division, either Matty Blair or Andy Butler. And to be honest, we could have nominated a couple at each different season and we've kind of just picked one out. They really get into it. I mean, Matty Blair is an absolute hero, to be honest. You know, we have something called Fit Rovers. It's aimed at gentlemen who are 35 plus, getting them to come to the training to the stadium on a Thursday to do some training and keep fit and keep exercising. And Matty sticks around after training, even though he lives a couple of hours away from the training ground. So it's a fair old drive when he gets home, but he sticks out after training for 2 or 3 hours to wait for the Fit Rover sessions to start, to then come and see the participants and talk to them and keep them engaged, because he knows how much they, you know, they love the club, and so it's great when you can get players doing stuff and doing stuff off their own bat, not necessarily being led by us. You know, we had it with James Coppinger. We had a young fan who we played Crystal Palace last year, and the young fan had put a notice out, please can I have Coppinger's shirt. James Coppinger saw it after the game on social media and asked us to go and find the kid so you can make sure you got your shirt and stuff like that. So yeah, it's brilliant. It does make a difference, but it comes from you know, getting the manager on board early, and we do that really publicly with our job description that goes out when we've had a change of manager, and saying this is something that is key to how we operate as a club.
It's clear that the cult, that, you know, the, it's a weird word to use, I guess, but culture. But actually, the things you believe in, the principles you abide by, they're very evident at Rovers.
Yeah, I think so. It go literally everybody, whether it's a match day steward, the chief executive, a director or a player, contributes to what we're trying to do for fans, whether it's on a family audience, whether it's core fans, whether it's match day experience, you know, there's different ideas that come from everywhere. And where possible, we'll try and implement them and use them. And everyone, you know, the culture is great. It's, you know, as I say, I left the club and came back, and you don't go back to organisations that you don't like, do you, from a work perspective? You know, it's, and one of the reasons I like it is because the culture is so good. Everyone genuinely wants to try and do their best for each other. And hopefully that shows publicly in terms of what we're all about.
Time for the roundup.
Yeah, once again, it's the roundup, and has been our approach to this. We're going to feature one particular news item which we thought was interesting. We're recording this podcast in the middle of May. The lockdown in the UK is starting to be loosened, and we're now being asked to wear masks on public transport. I was sat in my chair last night watching TV, and it occurred to me that if I'm going to wear a mask, I don't want to make a grey one out of a pair of socks, which has been suggested. I want to wear my colours, and it's great to see that clubs are already on that, offering club-branded face masks, which I guess people wouldn't have expected. Dundee United were one of the first. You know, it's great to see that iconic black and tangerine offering that the club are already putting out there. That's the case, Darren, isn't it?
Yeah, and it is, and you know, probably not for me to say, but Bromby fans have been wearing branded face masks for a long time.
That is true. That is true. So, folks, I mean, take the time at your own club. I'm sure we'll be doing this sooner or later. It will be a way to support your own club through this difficult time. And it's great to see Dundee United on the front foot when it comes to this. So we want to give a big thank you to Sean. Thanks for being with us today, Sean.
Thank you very much, guys.
And of course, thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next time on the Fan Experience podcast.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience was recorded live. See you next time.